May it please the court, my name is Nanda Davis and I represent the appellant Roy Edward Haley. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please.
4 minutes, yes ma'am.
Thank you.
Ms. Davis, let me jump in, because I think this is a fairly straightforward, I'm not sure it's a legal analysis, more of a grammatical analysis, I think. I went to law school with the understanding there'd be no math, but I guess I should have specified there should be no grammar. But looking at the statute, and I think we could all agree it's probably not the best worded statute, and you know, every time I write the words in an opinion, the General Assembly is presumed to intend that which they say. I kind of choke a little bit on that. But it seems to me what the statute does in a nutshell is provide a list of people who can draw blood. But I noticed that list, at the end of that list, there's a double or. Now, thinking back to sixth grade grammar, I think I learned somewhere along the way that when you have a list separated by commas, and then either an and or an or, that relates back to the prior list. And the use of the or suggests that anybody, any particular category within, you know, separated by commas would be joined with that term following the or. But then there's another or. And it says, or nurse designated by order of the circuit court. Now, the Commonwealth talks about double antecedent rules and so forth and so on, which I get. I wasn't sure I ever knew it was called that until I saw the Commonwealth's brief. But it just seems to me we have to decide what did the General Assembly mean when they put a list and then that has an or in it, which seems to be in the abstract if you just ignore everything after that, says all of these people can do something. And then there's another or, and then another category of person with a stipulation or with a condition. Why isn't the Commonwealth's, interpretation reasonable? Or in the alternative, how do we parse that second or?
Your Honors, if you look at the statute here, there is the clause designated by order of a circuit court. And then there's a clause following it, using soap and water. To take on the Commonwealth's argument, using soap and water must necessarily apply to every single healthcare professional in the statute, starting with physician down to nurse. Otherwise, it makes no sense that only one category of individual would have to take blood in a certain way for it to be preserved for evidence. So the Algier case that the Commonwealth relies on stands for the last antecedent rule, and it's clear. It says that this last antecedent rule stands unless there is a contrary intent in the statute. It is our position by having these multiple phrases that must necessarily qualify every single health care professional in the statute that the designated by order of a circuit court must also therefore qualify.
What intent of the General Assembly is furthered by requiring a physician, a licensed physician in the Commonwealth of Virginia, to be designated by a circuit court order before they can draw blood?
Your Honor,
how does that make any sense at all?
I think it makes a lot of sense. By analogy, when I graduated from law school and I passed the bar, I was eligible to practice law. However, before I could be on the Roanoke County Circuit Court list to represent felony defendants, such as Mr. Haley, I had to follow another lawyer around, and I had to have him then recommend me to the Circuit Court in Roanoke County and the Virginia Indigent Defense Commission that I was then eligible and able to represent defendants who had felony charges. By analogy here, these individuals, all these healthcare individuals may know how to safely draw blood, but they do not necessarily know the individual requirements for taking, cleaning someone's arm, storing it in two vials, labeling it in that certain way. And in fact, there's no way that they would know all these particularized requirements unless someone told them or pointed them to the statute. In fact, many of the things that people...
Let me stop you again. Okay, let's... taking your analogy... The statute refers to registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, and then after that last or, nurse, just nurse. And then it's followed by the phrase designated by order of the circuit court. What reason would the General Assembly have to segregate the various types of nurses if your argument is correct? All they would simply have to put in the statute is simply the word nurse. since everybody has to be designated by the circuit court, why have all these different categories of nurses?
I think that the General Assembly was trying to say, we have these different categories of individuals we know who may draw blood at the local hospitals or at the local jail for the purposes of a driving under the influence prosecution. But there may be other individuals. There may be other types of technicians in addition to a graduate laboratory technician, or there may be other types of nurses, such as other than a licensed practical nurse or a registered nurse. It's possible that the General Assembly envisioned some sort of nursing aide or assistance or some sort of other type of nurse or someone who had other qualifications.
But it seems to me that's the point. They could have simply just said nurse and let it go at that. And we wouldn't, presumably the General Assembly intended something by using the term registered nurse, licensed practical nurse, or just nurse. If the word nurse covers everything, why the necessity for adding two other types of nurses in there?
I'm not sure what the General Assembly was thinking. I think that they were trying to create a catch-all phrase, though, to incorporate any other type of healthcare professional.
But we have to presume, one of the canons of statutory construction is we have to presume that the General Assembly chose the words they used with care. And it seems to me, if their intent was that everybody who draws blood be on a list created by a circuit court somewhere, then they could have simply said that without having to parse out all these different categories of medical professions.
They could have said that, or they could have listed the individuals that they envisioned who might be the people to draw blood and then try to do a catch-all. If you look at this...
I appreciate Judge Humphrey's question, but let's also look at this from a practical standpoint. As I understand it, the order that is most important in this case is a 2000 order, an order that's 16 years old. And wouldn't it seem that if this order was intended to encompass any and everybody who was entitled to draw blood, that this thing would need to be updated probably every 3 months because it's going to be turnover in the hospitals and the places where blood is drawn? Is that what you envision?
I envision that anytime someone is added to the list at Lewis Gale or Roanoke Memorial Hospital who understands the procedures in 268.5 and 268.6, then they would apply to the circuit court and be added to that list.
So theoretically, if this is deemed as a substantial right here, anyone who was convicted from 2000 to 2016 who had blood drawn from a person who was not on that list could come back into court and theoretically argue that the conviction is void?
It is possible that they could come back into court. And I think that order is very important, actually, because if you look at that order, which is on page 62 of the record, it only lists registered nurses. And again, circuit court orders are public record. Whether someone goes and looks at that order is beside the point. People are deemed on notice of what's in circuit court orders. Anyone who cared to look at that circuit court order from those years forward, and I believe it has been recently updated, would know that Roanoke County interpreted 268.5 to include registered nurses, that registered nurses had to be on that list. It is maybe not clear how Roanoke County parsed out this particular statute, but what is clear is that they required registered nurses to be on the circuit court order.
And you say Roanoke has updated the order now?
They have, yeah.
Adding a whole bunch of other people who are eligible to take blood now?
I don't have it with me. I'm sorry, Your Honor. But perhaps because of this case they updated it. I don't know. And Nurse McWilliams was not on that list. And only registered nurses were on that list. We didn't have other types of nurses or phlebotomists or physicians or anything. What is clear is that people were on notice that that's how Roanoke County interpreted that. This is a matter of first impression for this court. The Commonwealth has cited the case of Elliott, which is a September 2010 case from this court, but that case does not directly take on this very issue of whether 268.5 requires that all healthcare professionals be designated by order of a circuit court. It particularly looks at the question of whether an EMT or a paramedic under that statute qualified as a phlebotomist for the purpose of that statute, but I do not see in that opinion how this very issue itself was preserved. And anecdotally, I believe that this statute is interpreted in different districts in Virginia in different ways. And so again, this is a case of first impression. Otherwise, unless you have questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Hearing none, we thank you. Ms. Fitzgerald.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Fitzgerald on behalf of the Commonwealth. As Judge Humphreys noted earlier, I think that we are faced with a grammar question in this case, and I was also not aware of the technical title of that grammar rule, but it's a well-established grammar rule. It's been used by the Virginia Supreme Court and used by the United States Supreme Court.
Well, does the fact that the Circuit Court maintained an order designating RNs as persons who were able under the statute to draw blood suggest that this statute is ambiguous and therefore the rule of lenity should apply?
No, Your Honor. I think looking at the plain language of the statute and applying the grammar rules as they are, the statute is not ambiguous and should be applied in the way the Commonwealth applied it in this case. The fact that the Circuit Court listed registered nurses on the order, the fact that the court provided more information than was statutory necessary in its discretion, which it's permitted to do, doesn't say people who aren't on that order, who are otherwise qualified under the statute, shouldn't be permitted to draw blood. General Assembly has deemed fit to list all of these people individually.
Well, at a minimum, I think we can all agree that the statute is written in such a way that reasonable people apparently can differ as to what exactly it says. In terms, though, follow up on Judge Huff's question, in terms of the rule of lenity, it seems to me this is a procedural statute, not a substantive. There's no substantive right granted here. It's simply a legislative specification for the procedure to be followed. Would you agree with that? So the in terms of statutory interpretation, we should interpret it in a way that effectuates whatever legislative purpose we can discern from it.
Correct, Your Honor. And it shouldn't be the construction can't be unreasonably narrow or restrictive or run contrary to the General Assembly's intention.
It's not strictly against the Commonwealth, I guess would be my point.
Correct.
Hasn't our court ruled that this statute is substantive and not procedural?
In the context of, whether this would go to admissibility or weight under 18.265.11, this court has ruled in Snyder, citing,
Brooks.
Brooks, Your Honor. Not in this particular context, but it has ruled that for the purposes of the taker of the test, in other words, the person who is administering, who's drawing the blood, I think that was a DUI case. Those are substantive parts, but I don't know that necessarily makes this a penal statute, if I'm drawing a distinction that the court was not. I apologize there, but...
Well, the statute has penal overtones to it because if it's violated, there are consequences to it, but... You know, so there are procedures spelled out in it. You know, blood test, breath test, that sort of thing. And I guess it may depend on what portion of the statute we're talking about in context. But I don't know that we need to, or at least how far we need to get there. But in terms of parsing what's the Commonwealth position as to the purpose of this particular subsection of this particular statute?
I think the purpose is to protect people who are having their blood drawn, to make sure that the blood's being
from
drawn.
Disease, you know.
Yes, by a professional person who is, most all of those people are registered or licensed in some way by the Commonwealth, other than that last category of other nurses or people.
To follow up on Judge Humphrey's question, if that is indeed the purpose, and I agree with you that is indeed the purpose, why is there any need for a court order? In other words, if we believe that physicians and registered nurses and phlebotomists and all of these people who are competent to take blood, not authorized, but say competent to take blood, can legally take the blood, why is it necessary for a court order to identify people who are designated to be able to take blood?
I think, Your Honor, because there's a third category. The General Assembly has deemed the people, physicians, registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, graduate nurses. These people have training the General Assembly recognizes.
So they're in the universe.
Correct.
People who can do it.
But then we have another category here, that last a technician or nurse, and we don't know their qualifications. The General Assembly is presumably providing a catch-all.
Does the phrase designated by order, et cetera, modify the term technician or just the term nurse?
Your Honor, I would argue that it refers to that qualifying. I would say it was a phrase. So the last antecedent can be a word, a phrase, a clause.
You would argue that this is a poorly drawn statute. That's
yes, in particular, I think it would be helpful if there was a comma.
Have it both ways. If you're going to strictly apply the last antecedent rule, then we're talking only about a nurse designated by order of the Circuit Court, because the word technician Oh, I'm sorry.
Or nurse or technician.
I saw the word technician used twice. There wasn't in the context of laboratory. Never mind.
Sure. And again, the court has recognized that we have to, you know, apply it to the last phrase or clause that doesn't impair the meaning of the sentence. And using that full kind of or technician or nurse there, the general one does. And the circuit court judge in his order pointed out perhaps a reason for this additional catch-all bracket, and that would be that, you know, these rules apply all over the state, and it may be in certain jurisdictions, you know, who's the nurse on shift, who is the doctor that's there, making sure that all the courts have the ability to have someone who is qualified under the statute. However, further, Judge Alston, I would note that the General Assembly is presumed to be aware of the court's interpretation of statutes in this way, using that referential clause. So whatever their purpose was in adding that last designation on top of those people, the General Assembly is, as the court noted in Barson and as the Supreme Court, referring to Barson, has subsequently noted, the General Assembly is aware that this is how these type of statutes have been construed, and it hasn't seen fit to amend any of the statutes that have been construed using this clause. So in this case, further, I think as the court has noted, this is the only method of interpretation that would not make portions of the statute redundant. And we have three categories of nurses and two categories of technicians, and if that catch-all phrase were to apply, we would have multiple redundancies there. And as the court is aware, we have to construe statutes to give every word its meaning and choose the general and assume the General Assembly chose those words with care and chose, frankly, where to put that qualifying phrase with care, with the knowledge that this is how these type of statutes are construed.
A record anywhere, and I don't know enough about the medical profession to answer the question on my own. Maybe it's really just a matter of academic interest to me, I guess. But the term nurse, I mean, I know licensed practical nurses have to be licensed, registered nurses have to be licensed, but can anyone call themselves a nurse if they attend a nursing school, for example, and could that possibly be the rationale behind the statute? The record seems to be silent on all this, and I wish the Commonwealth had developed it below, because that's the first question I thought I had. It'd be easy to interpret this statute if it turned out that anybody could call themselves a nurse, and in this category they want nurses who have been recommended by a physician and made part of a circuit court order.
I think that it's a reasonable interpretation, and certainly someone who is in nursing school, who is studying to be a nurse, if you're in the nursing program at UVA, you're working in those hospitals there, and you are a nurse until you graduate and you get whatever advanced degree you want, whether it's an LPN or you go for your RN or whatnot. But those people who are working in those hospitals, I think if you're using the everyday language, those are nurses.
They could be a nurse's assistant. They could be a healthcare nurse, which is not really a nurse in a traditional sense.
Yeah, they could be a volunteer who is nursing.
To the extent that wearing a pair of scrubs doesn't count.
Right. Or a technician, for that matter. And that could encompass any number of things. But the protection there is that nurse or technician would have to be recommended by a physician and included on the court's order for that person to be qualified for public safety reasons, frankly. And that interpretation does make sense.
Thank you, Mr. Shiro.
I'd ask the court to affirm. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Ms. Davis?
Your Honors, I have a couple points on rebuttal. First of all, in the footnote 3 of the Commonwealth's brief, they do concede that this is a matter of substance and not just procedure, and I would point that out. They can't have it both ways, having conceded that. As for the issue of the nurse and whether there's a nurse at the end of the
actually, I think that there's conceding that particular statute that we're talking about is a matter of substance. That the whole framework is a matter of substance, but the subcategory that we're talking about is a matter of procedure. That's the way I read it.
Oh, I read it differently, Your Honor.
Well, in any event, that would be a concession of law that we're not bound by. So.
Okay, fair enough. Looking to a different statute and responding to the Commonwealth's argument, under 54.31, 3000, and 3030, they define nurse. And in that statute, they list RNs and registered practical nurses or licensed practical nurses. And so listening to the Commonwealth's argument, it's almost as if they're conceding that this is an ambiguous statute. We have two categories of nurses and then the catch-all phrase of nurse, and there has to necessarily be a redundancy in looking at that statute. This is a penal statute. It appears under 18.2. Drunk driving convictions or driving under the influence of drug convictions can carry jail time, and therefore this does need to be strictly construed against the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth relies on the case of Alger repeatedly in their brief, which stands for the last antecedent doctrine or the last antecedent rule. And I think it is important to note out that this case before the court today has an important distinction from that case. In Alger, it discusses the rights of felons and their rights to hold weapons such as firearms, stun guns, and tasers. In that statute in question in Alger, they set apart the different types of weapons by using subsections. There's a subsection A for firearms, and then there's a subsection B for stun guns and tasers. And so it makes sense that if you have a qualifying phrase after stun gun or taser, that would then only apply to that subsection B. This is not what we have in the statute. We have just all these healthcare professionals listed in one long sentence. Additionally, 18.2-268.5 appears in the context of all these different procedural requirements for preserving evidence and driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol prosecutions. In Alger, the statute in question appears in the context of limiting the rights of felons. Felons have all sorts of limitations after they're convicted of a felony, such as limitations on the right to vote. It affects their employment. So it makes sense that the legislature would want to limit what felons can do with firearms outside of the curtilage or their residence. It's not a question for our position whether these people are competent to draw blood. All these people, I believe, could probably safely draw blood, do it without hurting anybody, without causing any disease or getting any sort of contamination. But I still maintain that without some person pointing out the different procedures that are required to take blood for preservation of evidence and driving under the influence prosecutions, they would have no idea that they cannot use alcohol to swab an arm, that they have to use soap and water.
Well, is it a reasonable construction of the statute to, because this particular section relates specifically to blood that's going to be used ultimately as evidence in a case. Is it a reasonable construction that what the General Assembly is trying to do here by putting these requirements, however we choose to interpret them, simply to ensure reliability of the evidence, non-contamination, if you will? In other words, the whole point of the rules of evidence are based on reliability. All the exceptions to the hearsay rule, for example, are based on inherent reliability, that sort of thing. So the General Assembly has said, okay, you could use blood alcohol evidence in these types of cases, provided you follow certain procedures, and would it be reasonable, looking in context, that these procedures are designed to ensure that evidence is not contaminated, that you use soap and water, you do all the things that maybe a medical professional would normally do anyway, but because this is going to be used as evidence, we want to require it?
It's reliability, Your Honor, and it's also the right of the defendant to be able to take that second vial of blood and be able to send it off to a laboratory of his choice and have a second examination of it. So it's reliability under the rules of evidence, and it's also preservation of the defendant's rights to have that blood analyzed by a separate laboratory should he wish to do so. And chain of command, I would say that as well.
So chain of custody.
There you go. Sorry. for these reasons, we would ask that you reverse. Thank you.
Very well. We'll come down and greet counsel and then take up the Shelley case.